Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again. And welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Today on the program, we have two stories about art and how some types of artwork are areas of concern for many people. Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula claimed responsibility for killing 12 people at a French magazine in January. The group said it was angry at the magazine for publishing cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Recently, VOA religion correspondent Jerome Sokolowski visited an art museum in Washington, D.C. He found that Islam is not the only religion concerned about images said to represent major religious figures. Kelly Jean Kelly has his report.
Non-Muslims may have some difficulty understanding Muslim concerns about their Prophet Muhammad. But the National Museum of Women in the Arts is being criticized for its exhibit on how the Mother of Jesus appears in European art. Museum officials say they wanted to show how well-known artists attempted to humanize the Virgin Mary, painting her as a human being, not godlike. But some people have criticized the show for failing to include other works by modern artists.
In this particular work, we have the work of Sister Ursula Katcha.
That is Susan Fisher Sterling, the director of the museum. She says people are sensitive about religion in art.
I believe that whether it's the Virgin Mary or other religious figures, it's an emotional response. And when you talk about things that are so deeply ingrained in the human psyche and in the human heart, and that desire to raise to a higher level, I think it is a fraught subject.
Sister Marie Bernard is a Benedictine nun, a Catholic religious worker. She belongs to a group called Slaves of the Immaculate Heart of Mary. She liked a painting called Virgin and Child. It is from a period of history known as the Renaissance. Not all artists show the Virgin Mary in the respectful way Renaissance artists did. That saddens Sister Marie Bernard.
I find it horrifying that would be allowed in the public stream of art to be viewed, when artists through the centuries have been trying so hard to depict her so beautifully as they've shown us here.
Sister Marie Bernard and other nuns believe there are many ways to respectfully show the woman to whom they have given their lives. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. For the past 10 years, the Kenyan government banned any painting on matutus, large public taxis in the capital, Nairobi. The vehicles could only have an identical single yellow line or stripe. Recently, however, the president of Kenya ended the ban on matatu art. Now, taxi drivers have begun the battle for the finest paintings on their vehicles. Marcia James has more.
Peter Kinyalu, also known as Nash, grew up in a poor area of Nairobi. When he was young, he started making the urban art known as graffiti, painted pictures and words on public surfaces, like walls and bridges. The 29-year-old says he never outgrew his passion for the work. However, these days, he gets paid for it. And now his art reaches even more people. Nash paints matatus. His most recent work includes a bright pink bus painted with images and words from the American movie Titanic. Another work is all about the shoe company Puma. Nash says his themes represent Kenyan pop culture.
Mostly what we look for is the trending things, like movies, musicians, and so on. Sometimes we draw pictures of 50 Cent because guys out there like 50 Cent. A customer may come and say, I want mine to have a logo of Puma, Facebook, Adidas, and so on, because it's what he likes.
Nairobi's matatus were once famous or infamous for wild driving, loud music, and equally loud artwork. Many were also run by organized crime groups or cartels. In 2004, matatu art was banned as part of a government attempt to restrain the industry. The driving skills of operators did not improve much, and the cartels were not disappearing, but the art was gone from the vehicles. Now it is coming back. There are more than 10,000 matatus in Nairobi alone. A growing number are painted with pictures of movie stars. There are also words painted on many of the vehicles, like nuclear, hurricane, and repent. One matatu displays the mysterious phrase, appetizer undecided. Nash says owners pay up to $1,000 for his art. He says the colorful matatus get more customers.
Owners really enjoy those matatus. It's like competition. The most decorated, you always find them on top.
Kanoru Wambugu is the chief officer of the Matatu Owners Association. He says whatever appeals to the youth is good for business.
Young people really want to get associated with matatus. The students, the young people, and the people in the lower classes do not own cars. Therefore, they're going to use them. That's our target.
He also says matatus give young artists, like Nash, the rare chance to make some money for their skills.
That's what we want, those young people to draw. The moment they design those vehicles, they're getting their upkeep. And even you're going to reduce crime.
Mr. Wambugu says the matatu industry is better supervised than it used to be. He says there are graffiti rules to make sure that the painting on matatus does not offend people.
They want something that is not insulting, it is not inciting, it does not have any beer-related issues or alcohol promotion. We don't want to have pornography. We do not want to have things like promotion of war and violence.
Nash says he is doing his best to honor the new rules and urges other matatu artists to do the same. But he says there will be violations, like illegally colored windows and flashing lights. After all, he says, they just look nice. And with over 10,000 moving artworks in Nairobi, who can resist? I'm Marcia James.
And that's all the time we have for today. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. A ceasefire is to take effect Saturday in eastern Ukraine. The ceasefire agreement came this week after all-night talks involving the leaders of Ukraine, Russia, France, and Germany. Yet the leaders admit many details are yet to be worked out. Diplomats add that the agreement left many disputes unresolved. About 20 people were killed in fierce fighting in the days leading up to the talks in Belarus. The leaders agreed on a truce between the Ukrainian military and pro-Russian separatist forces in eastern Ukraine. During the next 2 weeks, the opposing sides are to exchange prisoners and withdraw heavy weapons from the battlefield. Russia supports the rebels. Russian President Vladimir Putin says the agreement requires them to withdraw to the former ceasefire line. He says Ukrainian forces are to withdraw from the current line, creating a wide, neutral area. Mr. Putin spoke to reporters Thursday morning, after the all-night negotiations. In his words, "It was not the best night of my life, but it has been a good morning, because we have managed to reach a major agreement." He said the agreement includes a Ukrainian promise to provide constitutional guarantees of what he called the rights of the people in two areas, Donetsk and Luhansk. The rebels have claimed both cities. Ukraine's new government has offered substantial self-rule for the two regions. But President Petro Poroshenko said the government will not go as far as Russia and the rebels want. The leaders of Germany and France launched this latest effort to end the conflict in Ukraine's east. They did so in an effort to stop the offensive by the rebels and avoid the possibility of United States arms sales to Ukraine. French President François Hollande said there is agreement on a political settlement of the nearly one-year-old Ukraine crisis. But he said all the details have yet to be negotiated. German Chancellor Angela Merkel sounded less hopeful. She said the ceasefire agreement gives hope for a solution, but leaves a lot of work to do. She described the agreement as better than none at all. Reports say the talks nearly broke down when rebel leaders refused to give up gains their forces had made in recent weeks. But Mr. Hollande said President Putin pressed the separatist leaders to agree. At least 5,300 people have been killed in the Ukrainian conflict. On Friday, Ukraine's military reported that 11 soldiers were killed in eastern Ukraine over the past 24 hours. Yaroslav Voitko is with the International Center for Policy Studies in Kiev. He says Ukraine is not willing to give the rebels any more territory than they have already captured. The land is said to represent only about a third of what they want.
It's not about another kilometer of the territory. It's the matter of principle. We will not agree to any further captures of our territories, but some compromise can be reached in the meantime on the ceasefire and stopping hostilities.
And that's In the News from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
And now, the VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Today, we tell a story by Patricia Collinge. Collinge was an American writer and actor. She was famous for her work in plays, movies, and television. In the following story, Collinge writes about an American husband and wife enjoying a visit to Rome. The husband also learns something about his wife. Here is Shirley Griffith with the story, Ciao.
Soon after they left the shop on the Via Condotti in Rome, Mrs. Engel opened the box and showed her husband the costly stones she had bought. "I love them. I just love them," she said. She dropped the stones back into the box as she and her husband began walking across the street. Halfway across, her husband pulled her out of the way of a passing automobile. "What is wrong with you?" he asked. "I just thought of the words I said to the shop owner. I told him I loved him. I wanted to say I loved the stones, but I used the wrong word. I should have said, it pleases me. Do you think he understood?" To Mr. Engel, it was not important if the shopman understood or not. What was important was his own wish that she would stop trying to speak Italian when it wasn't necessary. On their last trip into the hills, her use of Italian had helped, but they were in Rome now. Almost everyone here talked English, or at least understood it. They sat in front of the hotel and rested their tired feet. Mrs. Engel looked around at the flowers changing their color with the light of the setting sun. "Bello, molto bello," she said. Mr. Engel breathed deeply and asked the waiter to bring them each a drink. "Check, please," he shouted. Mrs. Engel, still in sort of a dream at the beauty around them, said, "You should have said il conto." In England, it's bill, l'addition in France, il conto in Rome. "Check, please," Mr. Engel said again, and almost at once it was in his hand. "It's just as easy to say conto as check. Conto is what you say, not what I say." The elevator boy opened the door for them, and she said, "Settimo piano, per favore," and the boy answered, "Seventh floor, okay?" And no one said another word. Not until Mr. Engel opened the door to their room. He let his wife enter first and then said, "Do you want to eat in the hotel or go out?" "Whatever you want to do," his wife answered. "Well, I would like to go back to the place that has the fountain and serves ravioli." "There are many fountains in Rome," she said, "and there are places near them that serve ravioli. You see, you won't even say an Italian name. You could mean anywhere. No one would know where you meant." "Well, you know," he answered. "Do you want to go there?" "Yes." She held one of her black dresses up to the light and placed a pink flower on one shoulder of the dress. "Italian is so easy. Conto, that's all you have to say." Mr. Engel took his shirt off and reached for a clean one. He looked at her. "What do you want me to do? Go around telling shop owners that I love them?" "That is not fair. Just because I made a mistake and told you. Now you'll think everything I say is wrong." "No," he answered, "but I do not think it is always right, like this chow thing that you say." "What chow thing?" "You say it all the time. Every time you see a child, you rush up to it and say, "Ciao." "Oh, you mean ciao." "That's what I said, ciao." I asked the waiter what it means, and he told me it's something Italian people say to greet other Italians. "I know it is. It's like hi or hello there." Mr. Engel shook his head. "It's more than that. It's something Italians say to other Italians when they know them very well. But you say it to people you don't know. Only to children." "Well, why to them?" "You do not rush up to strange children at home and say hi to them." The telephone rang, and Mrs. Engel answered, saying, "Pronto." The person on the other end thought she could speak Italian and began talking in Italian. The talk ended with both sides talking English. "That's what I mean," he said. "It's making them believe you can talk Italian." "I really think they know I can't speak too much Italian." "Then why do you do it?" he asked. Mrs. Engel touched the pink flower which she had placed on her dress. "I like to communicate. I like to reach out my hand and my mind. When I talk to children, I do it for their mothers and fathers. They're so proud of their children. So even if I say the wrong things, they know I'm trying to understand them. And perhaps they will try to understand me. It's being friendly, and it's fun. I'm not criticizing you, but can't you be friendly in English?" Mrs. Engel stepped into her dress. "Do you mean I sound foolish?" "Not you especially. Anyone." "I see what you mean. Well, ready?" They entered the elevator. He saw that the pink flower was gone from her dress. And she just smiled at the elevator boy when he said good evening. And even when they got down to the street, she was silent. Usually she told the car driver where to take them, in Italian. But now she waited for her husband to tell him. At the eating place, it was the same. She smiled at the waiter, but said nothing. And when Mr. Engel showed her the menu, she just said, "I'll have the casserole and the asparagus. The ravioli first, of course." The waiter left after smiling and talking in Italian to her, but she just smiled at him. She looked around the room, not seeing anything. Was she angry, Mr. Engel wondered? Was she treating him with one of her silent periods? No, he knew all her silences. This one was different. When their drinks came, her eyes met his calmly. There was no bitterness in them, no anger. Perhaps she was tired. But she didn't look tired. The waiter understood English. So she talked English, and that was that. Or was it? No, something was wrong. And he had to find out what. He began talking to test her feelings. "This is a good place. I'm happy we came back to Rome." "Yes." "It is very nice," she answered. Something was wrong. Nice was a word she never used in Rome. It wasn't a word for Rome anyway. You might say, "Rome is noisy, perhaps colorful, even romantic, but never just nice." As they ate, Mrs. Engel agreed with everything he said. But she was too quiet. Something had left her. It was as if someone had turned some of the lights off in a room. You could still see everything, but not so clearly. He looked out of the window onto the street. Rome, rich in history, the warm night, the happy voices, the shouting voices, voices of mothers and fathers, of children, and even of visitors such as he and his wife. Visitors who never really saw or understood all there is to see and understand. Then he knew what Mrs. Engel had been trying to do. She had been trying to understand, trying to get a little closer to the city and its people. She had been reaching her hand and her mind out to them. Now she sat across from him as she might anywhere, New York City, Boston, or Podunk. But this was Rome. He had closed the door to her happiness, her ideas of Rome. He had crushed her. That was the right word, crushed. And this was the last thing in the world he wanted to do to Mrs. Engel. He breathed deeply and said in a voice louder than he wanted to, "Canto, il canto." He felt Mrs. Engel's eyes look at him as he paid the waiter for the food and gave him extra money for himself. Out on the street, they walked near a mother holding a little girl. Mrs. Engel moved closer to the mother and said, "Bella, bellissima." The woman lifted the little girl higher for Mrs. Engel to see. Mrs. Engel laughed and made the special wave. "Ciao, ciao," she looked at her husband, and he saw her eyes were filled with happiness again. Mr. Engel felt a strange lump in his throat, and then he waved to the child in his own way. "Ciao," he said, and he felt his wife's arm as she moved closer to him and slipped it through his.
You have just heard the story Ciao by Patricia Collinge. It was adapted by the Special English Staff. Your storyteller was Shirley Griffith. This is Bob Doty. Please listen next week for another program of American Stories in VOA Special English.